This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You're listening to Tremendous Leadership with Dr. Tracy Jones.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Tremendous Leadership Leaders on Leadership podcast, where we pull back the curtain on leadership and we talk with leaders of all ages and stages about what it takes to pay the price of leadership. And today I am tremendously excited because my guest is Vicky Glogg. I want to tell you a little bit about Vicky. Vicky is a licensed therapist working at Penn State Health in Hershey, but she is also the small business owner of 988 Designs Company. And if you're dialing that, it's NEED Company. And she has taken her love and passion for designing and making apparel and merchandise, and she has combined it with her profession of mental health and suicide prevention awareness to sell products that help our community end the stigma. Vicky, thank you so much for agreeing to be my guest on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to tell our listeners, because they're always like, how do you meet all these tremendous people? Well, this past October, I was at Tanya Nabeer's women's conference, the Be Extraordinary Conference, and I was there with my table, just connecting and networking with people, and the tremendous Miss Vicky came by. And we shared some words, and she shared a transition she was going through in her life, and she got a copy of Spark. And fast forward to, I think about a week and a half ago, I got a note from her on LinkedIn. You know, we immediately connected like you're supposed to. I got a note from her about this tremendous new chapter in her life. So I'm like, well, I got to have you on the podcast to share with it. So I'm sure she's going to talk about that at the end of our podcast. But Vicky, just welcome again.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here and I'm honored that you had me on the podcast.
You're so welcome. Well, Vicky, we're here to talk about the price of leadership. And my father, Charlie Tremendous Jones, wrote a book, or actually gave a speech. I put it in a book format many years ago. It was one of his keynote speeches, and he called it The Price of Leadership. And in it, he said that if you are truly going to be a leader, there are four things that you are going to have to deal with, all of us, and no matter how successful or the worst leader in the world. The first of them is loneliness. And we've all heard that. It's lonely at the top. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. But can you share with us a time in your life maybe where you went through a season of loneliness? And if we have any of our listeners out there that are in that season, maybe a resource or a word of advisement that you would give to them?
Yeah, absolutely. So it can be very lonely at the top. And I couldn't agree with your father more than that. And before I transitioned to the therapist role at Penn State, I was the clinical director of a rehab facility, and I had to oversee a lot of staff. And it was challenging at times because you would know the ins and outs of what's going on behind the scenes that you couldn't really tell your staff yet. And it was really hard because you want to be such a transparent leader and just inform them of what's going on. But at the same time, you have to wait for the right moment to present that to your team. And you want to present it to all of them at the same time. It's not whisper down the lane. And I think the most powerful thing that I've learned along the way is to utilize the other leaders that are in your army. And I've always found that to be the most beneficial, whether it was having a clinical supervisor working underneath me and, you know, discussing these transitions and getting those feelings out, like, I can't believe we're doing this, and just processing behind closed doors and just processing those feelings, because change isn't the greatest for everybody. And it's like, how is each person going to respond, and looking at the personalities of every member of your team. And by having those conversations with the director of nursing or the executive director or the chief clinical officer, all those other leaders that are in this army with you, taking on that role and know what the processes are that are going on behind the scenes that the rest of the staff don't know. I think that's the most imperative thing to utilize is those members that you can rely on, that you can process these things. For me, it was always imperative to just, whenever we were having a meeting in regards to something changing, I would look at who was invited in that meeting and say, okay, these are people I can talk to about this because I'm keeping it confidential until it's ready to roll out. But at the same time, these are the people that are going through this change with me. And even though I would work with a director of nursing, something may be changing with her in the medical field versus me in the clinical field. But at the same time, we as both leaders were able to utilize each other. But at the same time, there is that moment of loneliness in regards to she can't relate to me in regards to clinical. And then it's like, who do I look at to support me in that element? And it's just seeing, being able to be aware of who is around me. And so for me, it was the chief clinical officer, the executive director, individuals like those that you can just process those and kind of start looking and saying, okay, I looked at this process that we're about to change. Here are the pros, here are the cons. Here's where I think we're going to have hiccups. But I think the most important thing is processing and kind of bouncing ideas back and forth of how to present this effectively, appropriately, and in a healthy manner to the team.
Wow, that's really sage wisdom, Vicki. And let me ask you this. So I know leaders like myself were like, oh, I dream of a team like that. And if you're listening and you're blessed with a team like that, then you know how imperative that what Vicki's talking about. Really great wisdom. Vicki, how many people would you say were in like this inner circle of yours that you could go to and help? Because I think there's a lot of misconception maybe about what that inner circle looks like.
Sure. For me, in my direct facility that I was working at, there was about five leaders. There were five of us, all of different backgrounds, all having different departments. And then above us, we had our corporate leadership team, which were very heavily involved. They were brilliant, brilliant servant leaders. And that's another little niche I will put in there that when people are asking, what's your leadership style? Servant leadership, I think, is the most profound and unique and most beautiful type of leadership style anyone can possess. And in the corporate leadership, I had about three individuals that I would go to who knew really what was going on. And that was our chief clinical officer, our CEO, and our chief marketing officer. Those three people really threw out the ideas. And then how are we going to work as a team to build that? And then the five of us would develop those things amongst us.
I like that. And that's so important for leadership. You know, you have this really tight inner circle, and then you have your other early adopters, and then it kind of goes out from there. So there's ripples. So for leaders out there, you will encounter loneliness. It's what it is. There's only one of you, and you're the only one getting paid to do what you do. Yeah. By virtue of the nature of what it is, you're going to be alone. But loneliness, like you said, I love that you really talked about that. So it's imperative as leaders, whether you've been in the job for 30 years or 3 minutes, find those people in your in-group, in your inner circle, and make sure you cultivate that relationship because you're going to need them. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
And I like the waves, Vicki, that you kind of, rather than just blast it all, get the ones who need to know, the closest, the ones who can really give you some wise, and before you kind of broadcast it out to the masses, to everybody else.
And that's one thing that I really learned that skill set most recently in my previous position. Our executive director was amazing. He was outstanding. And he just had this process of his own for new processes that developed. Like, all right, we have the introduction. We have the thought process of the pros, the cons, the hiccups, the bumps in the roads that we may face, how we're going to present this to the team. Let's develop it. Then we would have like an early launch date. Hey guys, we're going to pilot this new thing first. And then we would pilot it for about a month. And it's like, okay, here's the hiccups. Here's the changes. Here's this, that, and the third. And now here's our official launch date. That's something that I really took away from his leadership is don't just gun it. Take those baby steps. Take it one small bite at a time. Don't gobble the whole cake. If you want your cake and eat it too, you have to take it piece by piece. So.
I love it, Vicki. Okay, well, thank you. The next topic we're going to talk about is weariness. And I'm sure in your role, especially in your new role, it's tiring. You have to be strong and mentally, physically, spiritually, everything to be a leader. And my father would talk about weariness, that a lot of times you have brilliant people on your team that just fill you up, are the wind beneath your wings. But a lot of times you have people that aren't doing what they need to do and are actually fighting against you and don't want to see it no matter what you do. You know, no matter how much of a servant you are, they're just not going to follow. So Vicky, how do you deal with weariness? You know, you are dealing with people in distress where before, and that's its own, you know, you have that empathy, you have that drain as you're pouring into them. How do you stay strong? Who pours into you and how do you stay at your top form so you can be this blessing that so many other people need?
I will say that in my last role, I didn't do as much of this as I do now. And I think the one who lifts me up the most is my higher power. And it took me a while to figure that out, truly, because I poured everything into my work, into my passion, into my drive, into the facility I worked at. It was a 24/7 facility. And so I led everyone to believe that if the facility is 24/7, Vicky's 24/7. And I burnt out. I literally killed myself and it wasn't healthy. And when this previous position ended, I had to sit and reflect with myself of like, what happened? What really just happened in my life? And as you and I discussed when we first met, it really was eye-opening to me that I needed to find myself again, because the last thing any leader wants to do is be a hypocrite. And that's how I truly felt when I really look back on it, because I was just pushing so hard for my staff and my team to engage in self-care, to have boundaries with work, to spend time with their families. And I wasn't doing that. I myself wasn't doing that, but I was telling others to do that. And for me, when I got to this place of complete burnout, I said, if I'm going to continue to do my passion and have that secondary drainage that I would always feel, that emotional drainage from providing therapy to others, I need to look at myself first. And through some self-awareness, through some guidance and prayer with my higher power, I realized that I needed to take a step back. And I thought it was really interesting that your dad talked about it a little bit in his speech, and you as well in the book, about taking that step back for a minute of being a leader to kind of like, and realize like, I know down the road, I'm going to be a leader again. I'm a born leader. But at the same token, sometimes we need to find ourselves again in order to get to that place. And for me, I took it as God's way of saying, you need to reestablish your boundaries. You need to reestablish your self-care and you need to find your passion again, because I had lost all of that because I had given so much to everything except for myself. For me, the weariness, we can give so much to others, but eventually our cup will empty. If we pour every single drop that we have into everybody else's cup and there's nothing left for us, then we will have nothing left to give. And for me, it took a turning point in my career to realize that, but it was the most powerful life event that could have happened for me.
I want to chime in here because I met you at that point, right? I don't know if it was that day or that moment, but I love that you said, you're just going to step away from being a leader, but it's going to happen again. And God knows when. Remember, he's already seen this through all eternity. The fact when I met you, you were so raw. And thank you for sharing. We've all hit burnout. My dad hit chronic fatigue. It happens to us because you've got to be very intentional about who pours into you. And we just work ourselves almost to death. But you were so vulnerable in what you shared with me. And you were so hurt in a tender way, not in an angry way. And you owned it. And you said, I've got to make a change. I don't know what it is. But then you really took the time for the self-reflection. And so for anybody listening out there, where you're like on the edge or the bottom has fallen out, because Vicky, I would say when I met you, the bottom had fallen out, correct?
It did.
Everything you loved was, not everything, but professionally, your identity, because of pouring out too much, they said, this is it. And they gave you honest feedback and you took it. You were open to receive it. And then we connected and you were open to share with me. You didn't know me from anybody, but you were so up. I'm like, oh my gosh. I think God already was working that. He already knew we were going to meet on October 16th or whatever it was. But when you stay, yeah, even if you're broken, that's the time when you really stay open, because that mess that got put away, and give yourself grace. You said that. I mean, we all try so hard and we rely on God and we have great friends, but we still mess up. And you gave yourself grace to just heal and reflect and not hide. I meet a lot of leaders when they go through burnout or the loss of something, they hide and they're embarrassed and they're shamed. Yeah. And that's a self-imposed emotion that we don't want. And I'm sure you're going to talk a lot about suicide. That's when people just get so tired. They're like, I can't do this anymore. Literally, I can't do this anymore. We want to fight that. So thank you for sharing that, because I think we all go through it. If you're pouring out, sooner or later, it's going to hit you, and it's a very delicate balance. Delicate.
Yeah. And I think based off what you just said, it's like, we think, how many times did Albert Einstein fail trying to figure out E equals MC squared? But he didn't give up. He just said, okay, this one didn't work, so now we try again.
Right.
And I think that's so important, that it's okay as leaders to fail. We are allowed to fail. And for the longest time in my career, as a young leader, I thought failure is not an option.
Yes.
I'm not allowed to fail. And for the first time, failing to the point where the bottom fell out, I realized, okay, I failed. And that's okay. Because by failing, I realized what I need to fix. And it couldn't have been more powerful than that. And I will say, like, I had my family and my friends and everyone supporting me. But when your entire passion and drive and dedication to something just completely goes out the window, it's, you do get to a place of like, what do I do next? Where do I go from here? And that's where I think it's so important that you really need to look at yourself and what happened. Because even if we want to blame others, we still had a part in it. And it's a piece of accountability that we have to take grasp of, that I don't think we always want to when we fail.
Or you run and jump back into something else because it's a hot market. And then you don't take the time to realize, because otherwise you're just going to repeat the cycle. And right, it's about us and what's going on with us. So Vicki, thank you for that. Okay, sharing of that. We did loneliness, weariness. The next thing you talked about was abandonment. And it's not abandonment in the term of like abandoning a pet or fear of abandonment that a lot of people deal with. And I'm sure you know a lot about that in the field you work with. But my father would always tell me, Tracy, I do more in a day to contribute to my failure than I do my success. And he was talking about abandonment as being very hyper-focused, abandoning the habits, the conversations, the time sucks, the habits that don't contribute to us becoming the most brilliant version of ourselves. Even if we think like carrying the weight of the world, being everybody's savior, well, that's something you need to abandon, you know, that savior complex. But can you share with us how you pruned away all the things? And I'm sure when you work with people in rehab, you got to prune off a lot of self-doubt and I can't do this and people telling you this. How do you abandon the crap so you can really stay highly focused on what's next?
What I realized is that in my last role, I was doing a lot of abandonment, but it was abandonment to my team. And me, as I always have and always will be, I'm a transparent soul. Always have been. I think truth is the best medicine. And I feel that what happened was I lost my position as a clinical director due to unhealthy and unsupportive environment. And that's the gist of what I got. And I really had to sit with that and think, what does that even mean? You know, like, I thought I was supportive. I was making sure that the facility ran while we were waiting for our next executive director to come on board. And I was making sure things were going smoothly and plans were going in place and data was being done and budgets were being figured out. And I was doing all these things. But the number one thing I was abandoning was my team and the support that they needed and the care that they needed and the time that they needed. And I thought in my mind, I was providing those things. But in reality, I wasn't taking the time to sit with them and say, how are you doing today? What do you need help with? What can I do for you? And I think that's so important, that when we start to abandon the needs that we have because of fear of failure, we then abandon everyone else who works beneath us. And always remember this quote, it's not the clients that we need to take care of, it's the staff. If we take care of our staff or our team, they will take care of the rest. And I think it's so important to remember that. And I lost sight of it. And for me, it was imperative to realize if I ever get into leadership again, which I will someday, that I need to remember that my team has to come first. That budget can wait. That data report can wait. If my team comes to my door and says, hey, I need to talk to you, or hey, I need help with something, whatever I'm doing that is for administrative purpose at that moment can wait, because I can't abandon my team, because without my team, I have no services to provide to the population we serve. That's the number one thing I took from abandonment in my role as a leader.
And again, you're not a leader if you don't have any followers. And right. Followers are not clients, customers, shareholders. It's the people in your professional home. But that is the essence of all leadership theory and why people struggle with leadership, because they think it's about doing things. And it's about your immediate team. You take care of them. That's the whole reason you're getting paid for. Yes, budgets and all that other stuff, but your number one priority is them. So thank you for sharing that, Vicky, and articulating that so beautifully.
Yes, of course. It's also so important that when we're creating job descriptions, those first five points are your five crucial job duties. And that's something that I think as leaders, we get lost in the other 50 bullet points instead of remembering those first five. And if I would have been more mindful and not abandoned my job description, just taken on all these other things, I think I would have realized within the first five points is provide supervision and guidance to the clinical team.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And we've all been there and done this. Even my friends that are generals, even my friends that are just administrators, even my friends that are everything, salespeople, this is something we deal with. So thank you for sharing that wisdom. Really great for our listeners to hear. Okay, last of all, certainly not least, vision. And excited to hear how you craft your vision. My father always told me, hey, vision, you have to be an Elon Musk or a Nostradamus. Vision is about seeing what needs to be done and doing it. Kind of law of attraction plus action. How do you hone your vision, Vicky?
I think my vision for me has always been about care, providing care to those around me. When I first started in the field, I started as a therapist. My care was focused on my clients. As I became a supervisor and a director, my care changed to my team that worked under me that I supervised. And then care as a director in a rehab, my vision focused to care of a facility and a team and all of that. And I did lose that vision. But I think after meeting you, going to the women's conference, reading your book, I was able to have that reignition of a vision because my flame had burnt out, like I said. And when I decided to take on the venture of a new role, completely different, I went from working in substance use for 7 years. I switched over to a chronic illness therapist, working with individuals with chronic illness and their mental health needs and looking more at a mental health basis. I said, okay, we're going to hit every single type of disorder here, but then also the vision of my company that I decided to create, that I was terrified to even consider starting. I didn't tell anyone that I was doing it because I was afraid of failure. And I said, no, this has to happen. I need to make this happen because this vision is so important. And I have about 3 or 4 different visions within my company that I hope just continues to grow and grow and grow, and more people can see that vision and that power of support and community and unity and ending a stigma, because there's such a hateful stigma towards mental health and substance use and suicide. And if we got rid of the stigma from it, more people would be open to the help that we all need, so that at the end of the day, we all can be cared for and care for others.
Well, I love that you talked about providing care. Kevin McCarthy did his book, Shift Happens, and he has this on purpose whole genre, but he says your purpose in life is a verb and a noun, and yours is providing care. And yeah. So anything else that orients back up to that will always keep you down. And as you grow your new thing and look at different apparel and speaking and all this other stuff, writing a book, I'm sure all those things orient back to that, because that's what keeps you grounded and keeps your identity and your singularity focused on that spark.
Absolutely.
Well, Vicky, can you tell us a little bit about this 988 Design Company? We've kind of wrapped up the price of leadership, and I want to thank you for that. But I want people to hear about what's next for you.
Sure. Obviously, I'm still a therapist. I love to practice. I'm still doing that at Penn State as my full-time job. But I decided, so when I was looking at what I want to do for my self-care, because when I lost my last position, I said, you're going to engage in more self-care. Like, you're going to take care of yourself. You could have a stressful day at work talking to 8 different patients and come home and completely emotionally drained. What are you going to do for yourself? And I had to find that, because I had never had so much free time on my hands in my life. And I had a Cricut that I purchased 1.5 years ago, and it was still sitting in the box that it shipped in. I hadn't even opened the box. And so I was like, all right, let's give this a try. And my sister-in-law, she really helped me learn how to use it and things like that. But I started
tell our listeners, Vicky, what Cricut is.
Oh, sure. Yes, of course. Cricut is a machine that creates decals and designs and things like that. And you cut it out and you have to make the design whole. And then you can put them on tumblers, on shirts, hoodies, bags. Everything. That's how people get decals for their cars, on the back of their cars that say dog mom or cat mom or things like that. And for me, I started out with just doing like the decals that I would just throw on my own mug. So I was like, oh, that kind of came out weird. So I'll just throw that on my own mug. And then one day I said, you know what? I'm going to try doing shirts. I made 2 shirts, one for me and one for my mother-in-law. And my significant other looked at me and he said, you should really start your own company. And I said, honey, that's very, very sweet of you, but no. And he's like, no, really. Those turned out beautiful. And he's like, and I love what you did with them. And both of them were in regards to mental health and suicide awareness, suicide prevention awareness. And I sat more with it the more he talked about it, because he is an entrepreneur. He has a couple businesses of his own. And I said, I don't know. And I thought more and long and hard about it. So I was like, let me just make a couple other shirts. So I made some more shirts and they just kept getting better and better. And I made different designs, like focused around mental health awareness, suicide prevention awareness. And I said, all right, God, I see you. You're telling me that I need to do my own line of mental health and suicide prevention awareness apparel and merchandise. And I said, but you can't start a business without a name. Like, you need a name before you actually go somewhere. It's actually driving home from work one day. And as we all know, our electronic devices, they like to listen to what we're talking about. I got on my Pandora, there was this advertisement that came on the commercial, and it was about if you or someone you love is at risk of harming themselves or suicide or anything like that, call our hotline at 988. As I'm driving, I'm thinking, hey, 988, 988 design. 9 is an N, 8, EED. We all need to be here on this earth because we all have a purpose that God gave us. And I'm not going to go with an LLC. Like, we need to do company, because the company we keep is so important to helping us continue our story and not end our lives. And it all came together. And not going to lie, I had a flood of emotions and I just started crying. And I was like, all right, I hear you. Like, loud and clear, I can hear you. And I was emotional and I came home and I told my partner, I was like, I came up with the company name. And he's like, what? And I was like, Need Co. We need company. We are needed on this earth. And need is 988 design. And he was like, all right, get moving, get started. You got the name. Now go with it. And that's where it really took off. And there's a lot of crafters, designers, vendors out there who they kind of make everything and anything. Like, oh, I make funny mom things on shirts and stuff, and I make this and that. And I wanted mine to be specific. I wanted it to be powerful and impactful to society. And so for me, it was imperative to be about mental health. And I knew in that moment that it was my passion and my vision of what my education is based off of, but what my love and passion and hobby are, and combining those two things together to make such a beautiful line of clothing and bags and tumblers. And I have more ideas down the pipeline, but I'm like slowly trickling things in to gain individuals into helping me and the stigma of mental health and suicide prevention.
Thank you for that. And for our listeners, we will have the website. We will have all Vicky's contact information out there. You can get in touch with her and definitely check out and support her new organization, because such a crisis right now. It always has been. I mean, since the dawn of time. And it's just wonderful that you are really got the calling and are responding to that call. And so great to see you come through this. You're so strong. You're so resilient. And well done, sister. Well done.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And Vicky, anything else before we wrap up that you want to share with our listeners on all things leadership?
I just want to add that I do have Facebook. My Need 988 Design Company is on Facebook. It's on Instagram. I just finally, earlier this week, launched my Etsy page. I'm going to be at a bunch of craft shows in Dauphin County, York County, Lancaster County, Berks County, even going back to my hometown of Schuylkill County. And my goal is just to get the word out to everyone. Even if I only have $100 in sales that month, as long as people are liking, sharing my pages, my posts, my pictures, it's just getting the word out about the stigma and ending that. And that's what's more important to me than anything. I think for me, to any leader, no matter if you're a brand new leader in your early 30s or been in leadership for 30, 40 years, I think the number one thing that I've taken away over the past 5 months, it's okay to fail. Failure only leads to success. And just remember, if everybody else in your corner walks away, that you still have God by your side, because God is always greater than the highs and the lows.
Beautiful. Thank you, Vicky. I love what you said. Whether you make $100, I always remember the verse, one of us waters. I think Paul said it, one of us waters, plants a seed, one of us waters, but God causes it to grow. You're planting the seeds. I pray this podcast gets out to people and they share it and they can help you water this vision. And may God grant you tremendous growth in this new calling of yours. Thank you again, Vicky.
Thank you. And thank you everyone for listening in. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, to our tremendous listeners out there, we would be nothing without you. And we are so thankful you tuned in. If you like what you heard, if you would do us the honor of a subscribe, maybe even a 5-star review, that would be tremendous. And please make sure you share this with other people, because as Charlie Tremendous Jones said, you're going to be the same person 5 years from now that you are today, except for two things, the people you meet and the books you read. So let's make them both tremendous. Thank you for paying the price of leadership, and have a tremendous rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Tremendous Leadership with Dr. Tracy Jones. Find out more about Dr. Jones at www.tremendousleadership.com. If you've been ignited by something you heard in this episode, let us know by leaving a review for Tremendous Leadership wherever you listen to podcasts, or by sending us a message through www.tremendousleadership.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.